The Carmichael Dave Show.
He's on the microphone when he's not on the microphone. He's playing a song, and when he's not playing a song, he's on the microphone, and then boom!
With Jason Ross.
No, he didn't! Yes, he did!
Call or text at 916-339-1140.
It's the Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross on Sacktown Sports.
The NFL draft is over. Viewed more than almost any other game from any other sport in America. I think there was like one NBA game and a couple of college football games. Other than that, it was a lot of people. A lot of people watched the NFL draft, Jason.
Yes, always do. A lot of people attended. That was amazing.
My goodness gracious, like 300,000 on day one. Anyways, we are the home of the 49ers, the NFC champion, almost Super Bowl champion Niners. And they had seven picks. Well, no, they had more than that. They had one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, because they had that one extra one. Who better to talk about it with than the beat writer for the Niners? The Athletic, our good friend who joins us each week during the football year. And we expect nothing short of our friend Matt Barrows to come on, and I want grades for every player. Yeah. I want to know how they're going to be as pros.
The entirety of their career.
There is nothing. Now, I say this, Matt's probably got to do a grade. I don't want to crap on his content. Matt, I forgive me. And by the way, good morning, Matt. How are you?
Good morning, and rest assured, I do not have to put grades on any of these draft picks or the draft class or anything like that. Although I am currently ranking the undrafted guys. They always bring in a handful of undrafted guys, and there's some interesting ones in this class as well.
You know, it's just a thing where we say it kind of tongue-in-cheek, because of course you're going to talk draft, and of course you're going to want to, you know, oh, well, this was a reach, or this wasn't, according to whatever. It just, and I'm sure you've done this long enough, we're probably similar on the same. It's like the whole thing about like, oh, this is an A. Here's what, like, you don't know. Nobody knows. I would imagine, I'll just bet, because I know they have metrics at the Athletic, I'll bet you draft grade pieces do very, very well. People want to see how good or bad their teams did. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying, there's no way of knowing how. I didn't know Debo was going to be this good. I didn't know Tom Brady was going to be that good. I didn't know half of these guys. You look at the all pros. Half right. of them were nowhere near the first round. So it's just kind of an exercise in futility, I think.
No, I agree. I mean, look how well the 49ers have done in the fifth round, for example, over since 2017. You didn't know in 2017 that George Kittle was going to be George Kittle, or D'Amador Lenore, or Dre Greenlaw, you just have to let it play out. You know, sometimes you can, you know, like what the Falcons did at quarterback, when you have the incumbent quarterback who's making a ton of money coming out and saying, oh, yeah, kind of was blindsided by that one. I mean, you can cast judgments on those types of situations. But whether someone's going to be good or not, no, everybody is in the dark right now because we're talking about the future.
Yeah.
And the future is unknowable.
Well, the one thing that was...
Like this Ricky Pearsall bust.
Yeah. about him too, Matt, was, I mean, that whole day leading up or a couple days leading up, a ton of wide receiver conversation about the 49ers, about Ayuk and rumors about Debo Samuel. Then the 49ers end up drafting one, which kind of led to more rumors. Yet, here we are with kind of everybody still around. Did the rumors and what ended up happening surprise you?
The rumors didn't surprise me. I mean, my whole thing going into the draft was, hey, guys, it's going to be a lot like the 2021 draft. You're going to hear a lot about the 49ers trading a wide receiver. Back then, it was Debo Samuel who was agitating for a new contract. But it's going to take an awful lot. 49ers are listening, and that's why, you know, you're going to see a lot of stories about it. But it's probably not going to happen. And, it was just like that. I mean, there were offers made during the draft for Brandon Ayuk. They didn't come close to what the 49ers would have required to even consider moving him. The highest was a second rounder. They were looking first to even start the conversation. So You know, they fielded some phone calls. It didn't come close. It sounds like that they were in contact with Aiyuk throughout the things, sort of their MO. You know, I was talking to Tim Kawakami about this the other day, but they like to be part of every conversation. They like to have phone calls. They like to be on the phone with other teams. They encourage teams calling them and asking about their guy because it allows them to ask about that team's players, and you learn things, and perhaps that comes into play at the trade deadline. You know, which players on the other teams are those teams ready to part ways with? So, I mean, it's all about information more than anything. The 49ers kind of open them up to that, and in doing so, it sort of creates this the situation where they're always included in every sort of trade possibility scenario. And they have to live with it. And, that's been the case for years and years and years now.
Is there a, wide receivers are notoriously sensitive, diva, that type of thing. And the Niners are no different. Is there a chance, Matt, that if they do return with Aiyuk and Deebo Samuel, that it's something that festers during the season, especially with the Aiyuk contract situation, or are they used to it by now? Is that a media thing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it will. I think this season is still going to be a lot like last season. It's going to be Deebo Samuel, Brandon Aiyuk, Juwan Jennings. Those are the top three guys. And if there's an injury to any of those top three guys, then you're going to start seeing Ricky Pearsall. But I don't think it's going to affect their snap counts, their clout, all that stuff. The great thing about Deebo Samuel and Brandon Aiyuk, they have huge egos. They want to do great. They want big stats, but they really support each other. You see that in their body language after one guy scores. The first guy in the end zone to give him big congratulations is the other receiver. And that's not always the case,
right?
With wide receivers, big-time wide receivers. But it's just true elation. I kept an eye on that because I wondered that myself going into the season, especially with Aiyuk on the rise and him looking for a new contract and Deebo Samuel having gotten his in the past. They're like brothers out there. They love for each other to do well, and I expect it to be the same. It's 2025. All of this draft was sort of done with an eye toward 2025. That, of course, is when we expect Brock Purdy to get a big contract. He's going to get it. So that's, A, going to put a squeeze on the salary cap, and, B, it means that the 49ers really have to address this team to one guy. It's going to be Brock Purdy's team, even more so than it is today. What I see is the 49ers parting ways with Deebo Samuel, and your starting wideouts are going to be Ricky Pearsall and Brandon Aiyuk, and Pearsall probably is more like Aiyuk than Samuel, although he does some Samuel things too. But my point is that the chemistry that Purdy has with Aiyuk, you can absolutely envision him having similar chemistry with Ricky Pearsall, and I think that's why he was the pick.
But you're saying that's a year away.
A year away, yeah. Or we're talking March of 25.
Sure, sure. Okay. So well, let's get back to Pearsall. I mean, I think you answered it there and why they see him as part of the future, but maybe why him over – there were some other areas of need, certainly, for this team, whether it was secondary, a safety corner, O-line help. Why do you think the Niners felt Pearsall ranked that much higher than maybe other opposing linemen corners kind of in that same general area?
Yeah, I think there were a lot of linemen picked at that point, and then there was a big gap. Can't remember the name of the next offensive tackle who was taken, the guy from Houston, but it was many picks later. So I think that they saw sort of a talent gap there. And so they thought that another position was probably the right one at pick 31. Cornerback, I mean, we were all thinking it could be cornerback there. Cooper DeJean was still on the board. I forget whether McKinstry was
as
well.
Yes, he was.
That would have been another one. And then you saw the 49ers, of course, use their second-round pick on a cornerback. So, I mean, I think they were looking at their board. They probably had a lot of cornerbacks rated similarly there. You know, my question was why Pearsall over Adonai Mitchell or Ladd McConkey or Keon Coleman, each of whom had maybe a little bit more of one physical trait than Pearsall, and certainly were being kind of touted by the media more highly than Pearsall, who is sort of a, I'd say, a mid-second-round pick. And this goes back to Dave's earlier point about, you know, whether a draft class gets an A or a B or a C or not. It has to do with how closely it sort of matches what people were kind of set up to think about these players. And Pearsall was very much a second-rounder in a lot of people's eyes. In Kyle Shanahan's eyes, he was a first-rounder. Because of what I said, he sort of got that separation, that wiggle that Shanahan likes. I mean, you saw it when he drafted Dante Pettis back in 2018. You saw it when he took Ayuk 2 years after that. And I think the big difference between Pettis and Pearsall, for example, Pearsall is a tough guy. You see that in how he plays the game, how he sort of attacks tacklers after he has the ball in his hands, things like that. And that was Shanahan's point. That's something that you try to teach anybody who comes through, but boy, it's awfully nice when you don't have to teach that. It comes automatically. And that was evident in Ayuk as soon as they got him. And they think that it's going to be automatic in Pearsall as well.
Matt Barrow's joining us. Hate hearing a scout tell him a player was, for example, not a good second rounder, but a great third rounder. This person always said the only time people talk about rounds is in draft preparation and on draft day. Never during any player's career would this person say, does anyone say a player was picked in the right round? The day after the draft, every player is graded on his playing performance, not his selection round. This person only cared about what a player would be able to do for his team and thought that round talk was the wrong way for a scout to measure his own abilities. It wasn't talent evaluation, but rather round prediction. That was the great Bill Walsh and his philosophy on saying this guy should have been a second rounder or a fourth rounder. And you kind of see that a little bit. And obviously, Matt, when you're doing well, you're a genius. When you're not doing well, you're an idiot. But it feels like John Lynch kind of has that attitude of, well, are we best player available? Are we filling for needs? That depends on who slides to us. And if we like a guy, if we can trade down, great. If not, one of those guys that seems to have at least read what Bill Walsh said.
For sure. I mean, and you see that with the 49ers. You know, a couple of years ago, they took Ambry Thomas, a cornerback, in the third round. And then they took D'Amador Lenore, a cornerback, in the fifth round. And one of those guys has done really well, and the other has floundered. And it's not what you would expect from the rounds. That happens time and time again. I mean, running back, Jordan Mason, undrafted. Trey Sermon, third round, same draft.
Yep.
One guy's on the team. One guy's been booted so far. So that's what I like about how the 49ers operate. After they get here, nobody really seems to be paying too much attention to the round. It's the performance. It's what they're doing on the field. And they've been keeping the right guys because of that. And I would say that Ambry Thomas, a guy I just talked about, Ambry Thomas, Danny Gray, a couple of third rounders from previous years. Those guys are in trouble based on who's come in free agency and this draft. All of a sudden, there are a lot of young or new cornerbacks, and there are a lot of new wide receivers as well. So the 49ers don't give you a long time to sort of get your feet, even if you're a first, second, or third round pick.
Matt, how about the totality of the draft? We talked a little bit about Pearsall, but, you know, they had several of the picks throughout the couple of days here. What did you think in general? What did they think of their haul they took in over the last couple of days?
Yeah, I mean, those fourth round picks stand out to me, beginning with Malik Mustafa. I think he's somebody that the fans are going to really like. Mr. Energy, kind of toughness, plays safety. He's going to play a lot of special teams as well. He could factor in early. Talanoa Hufanga, coming off of that ACL. I think it was on November 19. So that sort of kind of puts him in that, you know, he'll probably be, you know, mostly recovered when training camp starts, but you don't want to push it. So he and Dre Greenlaw could be a couple of guys that start out the season on PUP. I think that's a possibility, in which case you got Jair Brown, you've got George Odom at safety, and then you've got this guy, Mustafa. I think he could be somebody who plays early as a rookie, which is, you know, not been the case for the 49ers in recent years. They've got such a veteran team. That roster is so well filled out that rookies have a hard time getting in. But he might be an exception. Isaac Garendo stands out to me because when I watch him run, I think Raheem Mostert, big guy, sort of runs straight up and down, but really gets up to speed, sort of glides down the field. That style worked really well with Mostert in this offense. It's obviously working really well in this offense that's in Miami for Mostert. And this guy's very similar. I don't know if year one is the year that he makes an impact, but Elijah Mitchell right now is the number two running back to Christian McCaffrey. Mitchell's on the last year of his contract. So I think that Garendo could be somebody who kind of shows up in coming years. And then the last third-round pick, Jacob Cowing, is a punt returner. And I would describe him as a little bit more explosive version of Ray McLeod, who is a good punt returner, but never had the big return. No touchdowns, no punt return touchdowns for this team since 2011. That's the biggest drought in the NFL. But this is a guy who, you know, he gets a step on you, he's gone. He's a 4.38 guy, scored a lot of touchdowns at Arizona. So he I think is probably the front runner to be the punt returner of the future.
Matt Barrow's with us. You know, Matt, you mentioned the possible future of Deebo Samuel as a reason to grab Ricky Pearsall, and I'm sure you've seen it. C.J. Stroud, the wonderful first year, now second year from Houston, was alive on a draft show, just going absolutely bonkers over Ricky Pearsall. Steve Smith, the former Carolina great, again, just singing his praises. Did anything that happened last year, or specifically in the Super Bowl, in your opinion, because I've seen this written too, inform that pick as well, in addition to preparing for the future?
You know, I think it's what I said earlier. It's, you know, which receiver has really kind of bonded well with Brock Purdy? And it's Brandon Ayuk. And I'm not saying that Deebo Samuel hasn't. He's a different type of receiver. But it's the anticipation that Brock Purdy has works really well with a sharp route runner. These balls are being released well before these guys are making their break. So if you can do that consistently, if you can be in the same spot consistently, if you can create space consistently, that's going to link up well with your quarterback. And I think that Pearsall, who basically studied under Brandon Ayuk early on at Arizona State, has a lot of the same characteristics. So if you've got two of those guys on the field at the same time, that's great. I mean, a lot of complaints from the fan base about not going after a tackle and kind of protecting Brock Purdy. And I agree. I mean, I think that's the position that they have to tackle at some point. But another way to sort of protect your quarterback is to allow him to, get rid of the football quickly. And if guys are getting open quickly, if guys are getting open consistently, that does the trick as well. And I think that's what this pick was all about.
And just to follow up, and let me put the tinfoil hat on, you know, we're just looking for reasonings behind Ricky Pearsall. You've mentioned it a couple of times. Obviously, the Brandon Ayuk contract situation is top of mind for a lot of people. Even if it was just a small percentage, do you think any part of the pick was like, not placating Brandon Ayuk necessarily, but maybe making him more comfortable with this team, maybe allowing him to have a little influence? Or is that, again, are we tinfoil hatting there?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say that drafting a wide receiver is making another wide receiver comfortable. And like I said, Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel have become quite tight over the years. And so bringing in a guy who's eventually going to replace your bud probably isn't great. But again, Brandon Ayuk knows Ricky Pearsall, sort of helped him out when Pearsall was a freshman at Arizona State. I get what you're saying. I mean, if it was a tie between two players, if they had Ladd McConkey and Ricky Pearsall exactly the same, and they could kind of curry a little favor with Ayuk about that pick, I would for sure. And it certainly elicited the response that they wanted, which was a text to John and Kyle that said, fire pick, fire not going to lie, fire pick. So everything was positive from Brandon Ayuk after that selection.
And just to be clear, when he said fire pick, he wasn't saying, like, release them.
Fire the pick. It was fire.
That's how the kids
it's
say
an emoji.
Okay, good.
They don't even say it. They put the emoji.
Emoji.
I'm sure it was like a small little fire.
That means good.
Yes.
Like, great
good.
Pick.
Yeah.
Not if they'd have said sus pick. Yeah. That's kid for
mid. Right.
Yeah. So fire, just, you know, fire, Matt, we have an older audience, you know, so we're just trying to stay with the times.
Oh, I believe you, me. Yeah. Right. When we hang up, people are going to say, wow, that segment was sick. That's good. See, that's good.
Exactly.
That means that it was good.
I hope they still say that.
Yeah. I hope so, too. Matt, you started by saying you were going to be writing about the undrafted guys that they're also bringing in. There's some interest. So what caught your interest there that some other names that they're bringing in to see if anybody can make this squad?
Well, running backs, undrafted running backs. This is Bobby Turner, the running backs coach, longtime running backs coach. This is his baby. And he makes, I'm not exaggerating when I say he makes thousands of phone calls from February to March because he's calling up dozens and dozens of running back prospects. And he's calling them just about every day. And so he gets to know a lot of these guys, and he's been very good. Long, long track record. Jordan Mason is one of the examples of bringing in guys late in the draft or after the draft who turn out to be really good. And they got a guy from Missouri, Cody Schrader, who led the SEC in rushing last year and played in a zone blocking scheme that's very similar to the 49ers. So he probably leads the list of the undrafted guys. I mean, just a long, long highlight reel. You can definitely see him if there's a spate of injuries at running back, and nobody wants that. But that's how these guys have gotten on the field in the past. And we're going all the way back to Denver and the Mike Shanahan coach teams. They would have a different 1,000-yard rusher every year, and some of them were undrafted guys, Mike Anderson. So I think that this guy is probably in that long line of Bobby Turner diamonds in the rough that he brings in.
All right, two-parter here. Number one, their second-round pick and seventh-round pick, the Renard Green, the cornerback, and the linebacker they got in the seventh, both Florida State players. And I noticed there were no Florida State players in the roster currently. Do you think that was on John Lynch's mind?
I'm not exactly sure where we're going here.
I'm sorry, Matt. I'm being a goofball. I'm an FSU fan, and I was very excited.
Oh, you're an FSU fan. How are you an FSU fan?
My mom and dad both went to FSU. That's where they met.
Oh,
got,
okay.
So I was born into it. I'm a huge – all these years.
Yeah, it's never come up. Because I would tell you the story of FSU joins the ACC at a time when a young –
I know where you're going.
And FSU would just crush.
Pinky Barter.
Each of the ACC teams just, I mean, we're talking like 42-7 year after year after year. Until they come up to Charlottesville one day. Tiki Barber goes off. FSU has a chance to score at the very end, and they keep working
on. They ran the draw.
out of the end zone. It was a good call. A young Matt Barrows leaps with joy and rushes the field. One of the greatest nights of my life, thanks to your FSU Seminoles.
That's amazing. All these years, I remember exactly where I was when that game happened, the whole thing. And as soon as you, because I remember you went to Virginia all of a sudden, and then as soon as you started in, all I can think of was Tiki Barber, and you were on the field for that. Wow.
Oh yeah, I was knocking over people to get onto the field.
Nice.
Okay, then so that's the first part of my question. Yes, of course, John Lynch doesn't care, but always good to have more FSU guys. The second part of my question is, I have no idea. I completely forgot my train of thought. It was a good question, but then Matt kind of threw me a curveball with the whole...
That story was
well,
better.
I would say that both of your FSU guys have a chance to make a mark. I mean, Kyle and John talked about how there are no kind of starting spots open on this roster. It's not exactly true. Third quarter cornerback can be a starting spot if you've got three cornerbacks on the field at the same time. And we know two of the cornerbacks, they're going to be Charvarius Ward and D'Amador Lenore. We don't know who the third cornerback is going to be. It's probably going to be Isaac Yiadom, one of the free agents that they brought in. But I would say that your guy has a pretty good shot. If he can turn some heads, and certainly if he can play the nickel spot, which John Lynch said that he's going to get a nice tryout there, he certainly could be on the field early and often as a rookie.
He's the best in the business, Matt Barrows. You find out something, you think you know a guy.
Find something new every time.
One of his happiest moments in life was one of my saddest when I was just a youngster. But you know what? Get back to Cancun, Matt. Enjoy your off season, I hope. And we look forward to talking to you when camp opens.
All right, guys. Anytime. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. God. My oldest guest. Well, I had him on forever.
Kind of just ruined your day, didn't he?
It just brought – I remember exactly where I was, man. We got a break. We're late. When we come back – we'll post-mortem the Suns here real quick. Are they firing Frank Vogel? We'll find out next.
Wow, that segment was sick.
Get your sports fix.
Live and vocal.
The Carmichael Dave Show with Jason Ross.
How does it feel? Somebody remade this song, and they sang like that.
Orgy?
Was it?
Yeah.
It was like real, kind of like one of those scary-sounding ones. It wasn't like typo negative or something, was it? I don't know if we can say that. I think it's pronounced orgy, by the way.
Dude. Like a dog.
Right. Welcome back. That's Chris. That's Jason. I like that. I like that sweatshirt. I like
that
hoodie.
New.
Are you warm yet? Not in here. I keep forgetting to get you a Snuggie.
A Snuggie?
I was thinking it would be kind of a funny gift to get you a Snuggie because the air conditioning, especially with summer coming. And I like it cooler because I'm not under the thing.
No.
But if I got you like a Yankee Snuggie or something, then, you know, you put it over there by the dog bed.
Yeah, that's still here.
I need to bring that home. I was asked about that.
Oh, you were asked
by
the
boss over the weekend. The boss at home. Where's the dog bed? I wouldn't mind actually leaving the dog here. That dog's a bastard. Seriously, man, that dog is rude. Chewed up one of my FSU sandals.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, speaking of FSU. Will not shut up. Just like curious about everything,
I do not care for your American sports footwear.
That's exactly what she sounds like. Same tone and everything. She's very selfish too.
FSU,
buddy.
Please bring me my wine so I can watch my stories.
That's what we do. We have a Bordeaux that we put in her water bowl because that's what the French Bulldogs like.
Yes.
Very selfish. the demon puppy timer. It really is like a toddler, except you can put a diaper on your toddler. Mm. Yeah.
Still going in the house?
Not all the time, but there was she did leave a present in the upstairs hallway that number one son stepped in not that long ago in the dark.
Left what did number two son do?
The number one son stepped in the number two, and it was like, I guess
this is a problem.
It was the middle of the night. It was right between his bedroom and the bathroom.
Bare feet?
He got, well, because he, you know, he was in bed.
No, I know, but was he in bare feet?
Yes. Squoosh. He was so mad, dude. He was, I mean, any of
so
us
would. Turned into a frowny pile.
What?
Yes. Turned into a frowny pile.
What's a Mason mad look like?
Just like, ugh. Yeah, hate that dog. And he doesn't really, they're friends, but like. Yeah. He's just very, you can just tell the look. Like, he's got a furrowed eyebrow. Said he had to put his foot in the sink and, like, wash it in the middle
the
of the
sink?
Night. It's what I said, too, but that's what I said, too.
That was the best choice?
It was in the middle of the night. He was doing what he thought was right. It's his sink. I don't care. He shares it with his sister.
Oh.
And by the way, and we'll get to the Suns here in a second. I do want to run this by you guys.
Your time of the Suns.
That is true. My daughter has this new thing now because we're getting close to finals and all this. She's got a lot of homework. And yesterday at about 11 a.m., she came to me and said, Daddy, can you give me a ride somewhere? Where do you want to go? Starbucks. What are you going to Starbucks for? You don't drink caffeine. She goes, no. First off, I get the little Frappuccino. Does no caffeine. But she goes, she now wants to go. Didn't I tell you last week she was going
to the library? Now she wants to study there?
Because the libraries are closed on Sunday, so now she wanted to go to Starbucks where they have Wi-Fi and sit at the Starbucks and study as opposed to at home. And I acquiesced, and I said, fine. You know, look, it's a good problem to have. And no conspiracy theorist, I don't think she's like meeting her friends there. She's just not that kind of kid. She was there for like 5 hours yesterday studying in a Starbucks. And it just doesn't sit right. But I don't have a really good reason for why it doesn't sit right.
I'm not walking over there before I get my coffee.
Other than you have a perfectly good room to study in.
Right.
But apparently she can't concentrate in there.
Yeah, the dog's pooping in the hallway.
Yeah, apparently. The Suns pooped all over their floor last night and throughout the series. They are done. Frank Vogel seems to be...
Is he gonzo?
Well, when you see guys like... I mean, it was already rumored. Then you see guys like Shams Charania that are saying the Suns are going to take a hard look. That's... Yeah, I know. We can't... Who else are you going to fire? They can't move any of the players.
Right. And I know there... Wasn't there a quote from Kevin Durant afterwards feeling like he didn't get put in the best...
Yes.
Offensive situation. So, I mean, if your star is saying that's a little bit of a reflection of the offense and the coach.
Did you also see Brad Beal walking off the floor last night and just kind of shove, kind of flick
off? Yeah, that one, I mean.
I don't know.
I don't read too much into that. Maybe I should, but that's just an emotional.
Yeah.
Frustrated. I'm
kind of showing up your coach.
Yeah.
Too, but
not
I get
the best,
it.
But yeah.
According to one report out there, this is, I'll quote it here. A Sun source says Matt Ishbia, quote, has no idea what he's doing when it comes to basketball. It's like Looney Tunes around here. It's felt unstable since he arrived. He's a good guy in everything, I think, but he's just very involved, too involved. I know he played college basketball at Michigan State, but I venture to say he has no idea what he's doing when it comes to NBA basketball. Yet he's making a lot of the big decisions. We talked about it before. It's just what happens. These owners come in. There's a honeymoon phase. Everyone loves them, especially when you're coming in after Robert Sarver. They've had tremendous success in whatever business they had success in. They are surrounded by sycophants who are on payroll or just want to impress them. Everything's a great idea. Nobody wants their job in jeopardy. And people that are rich like that, they genuinely forget how to handle criticism because they're on such a heater. Like, I don't trust anyone's instincts but my own because it's worked for me. And it's kind of one of the cool things, if you will, about these guys buying teams is because it gets really humbling. Because your results are right there, and the buck stops with you. It's a results-oriented business, And a lot of these guys come face first crashing down right away.
Right.
And then usually they learn. And we've used Vivek as an example mm-hmm. before. He had about as embarrassing a first aid. I'm talking about on the court. I always appreciated what he did off the court. He had about as embarrassing first 8 years as you could have. Just everything from, you know, Mullen and Mitch and no offense to them, but just that whole thing to D'Alessandro to
Firing Malone,
yeah. Jazz band, 4-on-5, yeah. whatever. He's learned, yep. we think. Yeah. I mean, you could tell. Guess what? I'm going to hire basketball people, and I'm going to get the hell out. I'm going to show up every day. I'm going to cheer. I'm going to stay out of the media for the most part, and I'm going to do my thing. And, you know, honestly, when Vivek popped back up for the A's announcement, I think really that was his first real major media appearance in a while. He'd been pretty quiet, and you know what? He popped back up, and a lot of people killed him for it. You know, he got a lot of crap over that. Still getting a lot of crap over that. So I think it's one of those, like, there's no real upside to this. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he doesn't seem like a media guy necessarily, but he's come in. Look, I know basketball. I played Division I college basketball. I'm not like these other owners. This is what you do, man. It's a talent business. We're going to go out. We're going to get talent. Screw it. I don't care about those draft picks. Those draft picks aren't going to matter when we're winning championships right. and we're competing. And we're going to – well, here you are.
Yeah. You got to win the championship, so first.
Yeah.
And, you know, their depth moves were, you know – Chimezie Metu.
Right.
Right? You know, players like that. And that's what they're going to have to do again is, I would think, go back again with the group they've got for the most part and then hope, you know, someone else sees it that way and goes, yeah, like Eric Gordon goes, yeah, I'll sign a small deal because I want a chance at a championship.
Yes.
They need more players like that, though.
Yeah, they're going to need people that just want to come and ring ride, mm-hmm. really. Because when you look at their depth, Eric Gordon, Royce O'Neal, Thad Young, Isaiah Thomas, who they just added, Josh Okogie, Bol Bol, Drew Eubanks, Nasir Little. I'm going to be honest with you. On paper, that's not a bad bench. Mm-hmm. There are some good rotational role players in there, but it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, so I mean, in their logic, if they go, okay, next year we're going to come back and start this group again of Nurkic, Durant, Grayson Allen, Bradley Beal, and Booker, we're going to win a lot of games, and they yeah. will.
Yes.
Is it going to be enough? At this point, I would say no.
We'll take a break when we come back. Who's hot, who's not, and do we continue our streaks from the weekend? We will find out before we get to more Western and Eastern Conference playoff takeaways, what to watch, and the crosstalk along with celebrity birthdays. That's the rest of the show laid out for you. No reason to go anywhere. We will be right back.
What's hot?
Yeah, hot. Real hot.
And what's not?
It's not good.
Brought to you by American Energy Heating and Air, Sacramento's complete heating and cooling company and second opinion partner.
Can I just say this, too? I know because it was a conversation last year. Is there anyone left out there that is sad that we didn't get Bradley Beal? I mean, I understand he's talented and all that, mm-hmm. but my God.
Did you really have to do this before what's hot, what's not?
Oh, no. mm-hmm. Hey, who's hot? Christopher Lodd.
Jalen Brunson.
Hey.
He was 18 of 34 yesterday, scoring a franchise playoff high 47 points and 10 assists in the Knicks' 97-92 win over the Sixers.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot of points. I mean, I was hoping that series would be better. But now, like, my distaste for Joel Embiid is kind of, I don't know. I've always liked Joel Embiid, but.
Now you're on the Knicks bandwagon?
I do like the Knicks. I can't
Bing
lie.
Bong.
I do like the Knicks, but Joel Embiid is not. On one hand, I appreciate that he's playing through pain. I do. But just the floppy, foul-hunty, dirty play, all that crap, and now he's in trouble with Philly fans for being ticked that New York fans kind of took over the whole thing. Kelly Oubre, on the other hand, he kind of gave a backhanded compliment to Jalen Brunson.
Brunson's getting going after the slow first 2 games of this series. What do you think has allowed him to get in the rhythm?
34 shots. I mean, yeah, he's a great player, great player. I love playing against him.
I love his game. You know, he has a lot of fundamentals and skill set to his game. But, you know, anybody shoots 34 shots that has skill and that's a great player, you know, they're going to be able to do well. And especially you get screened, you know, you're getting mismatches and you're trying to find the right matchups and things like that. Like, he's a great player. He's going to capitalize on those things. But, yeah, I mean, it's just – it was due to happen, obviously. You know, JB is a great player. He's been playing well, doing this all year long. So just because I say he shot 34 shots doesn't mean he's going to stop shooting them. Because that,
I don't know that I've ever seen a 180 happen live. I mean, the first thing he says is 34 shots and then pauses. Yeah. And then it's like something kicked in and he went, oh, my God, what did I just say? And then spends the rest of it just glossing him. Kelly Oubre, who I like to call the Matt Olson of the NBA, who my wife and her best friend just won't ever shut up about.
Those eyes.
Those eyes.
They're dreamy.
So dreamy. Oh, Kelly Oubre. Well, I don't know what that meant, Simone, but...
This is sign language for yes.
Oh, she's agreeing with... Yeah, I just... Shut up about Kelly Oubre. All right, who's not?
I'm going to let you take a stab at this one.
Yeah.
Bradley Beal?
I'm going to go Bradley Beal.
Good job.
Hey.
Bradley Beal in 31 minutes yesterday. Beal had 9 points on 4 of 13 shooting, 1 of 5 from 3. He also had 6 turnovers and fouled out of the game, and the Suns getting swept 122-116 to the Timberwolves.
Good time to be a free agent. Oh, wait, he's not. He's getting paid a ton of money.
Ton of money.
Just $53 million next season.
Before we get to let's go streaking, I just have a quick who's not. To add to that, and I need a ruling. I've been forgetting about this. Who's not? Me. Why? Because the wife was at a friend's last night, so it was me and the kids, and so we did Sunday dinner, and we decided...
Sloppy Joe's?
Nope. Close. They wanted cheeseburgers. Okay. So we did cheeseburgers
and... Smashburgers?
And a salad. Yes, smashburgers and a salad. I made a salad, like a real salad. There was bacon in it, but still. And so I've got the 3 paper plates, because no dishes, and they're on the counter... And I'm setting up everybody's cheeseburger, and I put mine off the spatula right onto the bun. But I didn't notice in my haste that the paper plate was kind of hanging over the sink, and the weight of the burger patty caused the whole plate to turn over, and the bun, the fillings, and the burger went into a glass bowl filled with water that was soaking that had the salad in it. So it was so like everything's dead, right? So what I did, I immediately pulled the patty out, still hot, pulled the patty out of the water. I rinsed it off with the cheese and everything on it and then just put it back on a new bun with fixings and ate it. Is that allowable here in this case?
Yeah, I think that was the only thing salvageable.
Nothing else was salvageable. All the tomato, the pickles, the bun was done. The bun was done. But I'm sitting there rinsing off a cheeseburger thinking,
gross.
Because I would have had to have gone and cooked a whole new one.
Yeah. That's fine. Wasn't it good?
I mean, it was okay. It was okay, but I'm not going to lie. Like, I feel like a lot of this.
It was in your head.
Yeah, maybe. Like, a lot of the seasonings I feel like rinsed off. Also, 100% could have given that to a kid, and they would.
Mason, that's a Mason special.
He would never have noticed. But dude,
good burger, Dad.
Yeah, little do you know, it fell in salad water, son. Them's the breaks.
Oh, was it Salad Saturday?
It was Salad Sunday. Tossed up a nice salad for the kids and went for it. Let's go streaking.
It's time to go streaking.
We're going streaking.
Who is the Nostradamus of MLB?
Who can keep the streak going? It's time to go streaking.
What the hell are you doing?
We're streaking.
Dave, is that a smash burger or a splash burger? Says the text line. That's well done.
Yes.
Thank you. Anyways.
Got a 10 on the landing?
No. No, it tumbled. Tumbled into the water. All right, let's go streaking, Jason Ross.
I'm really surprised you didn't have a second thought and go, I'm giving this to the kids.
I had the thought. It crossed my mind. I've done things like this. Yes. Like, I'll drop something on the ground and be like, I'll give it to Avery. She's not going to know. You know, I'm the dad. I drink milk out of the milk cart, and I just kind of I position the fridge door so no one can see me.
Yeah.
But if I caught one of the kids doing it, I'd freak out. Like, that is disgusting.
Yeah.
But I like to think that I'm cleaner than my children. I'm probably not. But in this case, I just felt like,
yeah.
Danny in Chula Vista wants to know, was the burger by any chance made of turkey sausage?
No.
No, it was not. It was Sam's Club ground beef.
Oh.
That big,
what's for dinner?
Big vat of it that my wife. Vat of beef. All right.
Don't want to explore that.
I don't. Okay. Let's go.
All right. Friday, Dave, you were on a streak of 5.
Yeah.
Season best.
Yeah.
Trying to get to 6.
Yeah.
And you took from the Baltimore Orioles, who were playing the Oakland A's on Friday.
Adley Rutschman.
Three plate appearances. So limited times to get a hit, but he got you. One.
Hey!
That's a streak of 6.
That's a new record for this year. What was the record? Was the record 11 or 12 last year?
I think it was 11.
I think you're right. It was 11.
For you. You owned it.
Just over halfway there.
Yes. So you're at 6. I was at 3. Chris was at 3. Mm-hmm. I also, from the Baltimore Orioles, took Gunnar Henderson.
Gunnar.
He had 5 plate appearances, and he got 0 hits.
Oh, Gunnar.
Ooh, you suck. Sorry.
It's over. It's over now.
It's over. It's over, ladies and gentlemen.
That's,
you go with a guy named Gunnar, you're getting a hit, right?
You would think so. Henderson, Ricky's cousin.
Yes.
Great hitter.
Harry
Henderson. Florence.
Yes. Dave.
Dave. Ooh, good one. Yeah. Dave, Florence, Harry, and Gunnar. Okay. All right. Moving on.
All right. So I'm at 0. Dave's at 6. Chris was at 3. He picked Shohei Ohtani.
Yes.
From the Los Angeles Dodgers. He had 4 plate appearances. He went 1-for-4 with a home run.
Good job.
Yeah. So Chris is at 4. Dave's at 6. I'm at 0.
Okay. Well, speaking of, that's who I was going to grab. Give me Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani.
My second Dodger of the streak.
See if he can get to 7. I'm going to take former Dodger, current Philly, Trey Turner.
Shohei Turner.
Yeah, Trey Turner.
I am going to take Ryan Jeffers.
Jeffers of the baseballs.
Of the Twins.
Yes, Minnesota.
Twins. I only knew that because I picked him the other day. I went, I don't know who this is.
And he got you a hit.
He did.
Yeah, he did.
Ryan Jeffers, Chris?
Ryan Jeffers.
Jeffers.
Yeah, because we did the whole Jeffersons thing. Now I remember. Yeah. We'll take
a break.
He's
moving on up.
When we come back, Oklahoma City is crushing the Pelicans.
Thanks, Pelicans.
Would it be different if it was the Kings instead of the Pelicans? We'll talk about that and what other things that could be as Kings fans next. Mm.